Good evening, and welcome to the St. Petersburg by Night Podcasting Network. Tonight, we present to you our behind-the-scenes show, After Dark. Welcome, everyone, to the St. Pete by Night Twitch stream, where we play St. Petersburg by Night, a massive multiplayer 5th edition game of the World of Darkness, including Vampire the Masquerade, including Hunter the Reckoning, including Werewolf the Apocalypse. It is a massive, massive game consisting of over, I believe, 13 games running simultaneously in an open world setting where they can impact one another on a regular basis. But enough about that. This is St. Pete After Dark. This is where we talk about behind-the-scenes stuff. This is where we interview players and storytellers and other movers and shakers in the World of Darkness. I am Kent, also known as Mishikent on all social media. I am the lead storyteller of St. Pete by Night and also the host of St. Pete After Dark. We've got a very, very, very special guest today, Crafty Mirage, also known as Nikki. You can find her as a storyteller on St. Pete by Night. You can find her on Newark by Night. You can find her on a stream coming up soon for D&D. She's all over the place. If you don't know her, she's Crafty Mirage on TikTok. And she's also known for this little sweet treat, Chromatic Creation US on Etsy. She makes dice bags. She does all kinds of amazing artistry where you can purchase products. I have some myself that I use on a regular basis. She is a fantastic, fantastic, very talented individual. So let's go ahead and introduce her, shall we? Hello, Crafty. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi. Hi, everyone. I'm Nikki, also known as Crafty Mirage on the social media platforms that you can find me at. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm faking it really good.
You are faking it very good. In fact, I've gotten lots of positive feedback, and having played chronicle that you ran before becoming a storyteller on St. Pete by Night of Chicago by Night, I can speak personally to how much you've grown and developed, not only as a storyteller, but just as someone involved in the World of Darkness. But before we get to that, let's start way back at the beginning of your TTRPG journey. How did you discover TTRPGs? How did they come into your life? And what interested you most about them?
So TTRPGs for me started with the pandemic, because that's how it started for a lot of people. My grandma had just passed away, and I was massively depressed. I was working in a hospital, so I was already overworked from that, depressed from my grandmother dying. And then there was one day I was just insomnia. I couldn't sleep. So I'm just scrolling on YouTube and I find a specific D&D Twitch show that a lot of people watch and has a show on Amazon, Critical Role. And for the first time in like months, I actually laughed at something that happened in the campaign two, I think it was, that they were doing that's something Molly Mock did. But it made me laugh. I started watching and then I started getting into D&D. And I'm just like, wait, people actually role play in D&D? It's not just some guy being like, I'm going to attack this. I'm going to sleep with this. So like the role play aspect, knowing that people actually role play, got me more into it. And then I got into D&D TikTok to plug my dice bags, actually. And instead of making my account about just my bags, I ended up starting to cosplay. And then it turned into all of this fucking shit. And I don't know how I got here.
And what appealed to you most about Critical Role? Like, what really stood out about that made you such a fan?
I liked the dynamic of a bunch of people together playing these characters and telling a story together. You, like, if you, like, know me, which you do, you know me very well. If anyone knows me at all, I'd give zero shits about, like, the combat or anything like that. I'm a person who loves a good story. If you got a good story in a video game or in a book or in a movie or TV show, I'm hooked. If it's a good story, I'm in all the way. And that's the part that sells me on it. If it makes me cry, if it invokes a strong emotional response, but crying is like the that's how you know it's a good anything. If I cry at any point, which you've made me cry several times, so fuck you.
And was there a particular moment, like a particular Critical Role moment that really got you emotionally? Like which campaign, what specific
Critical
moment?
Role, campaign two, Molly Mock dying.
Okay. That's so you have a fairly traumatic response to beloved characters experiencing tragedy. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. But let's talk about from your perspective, because I have my own unique perspective on the situation.
Oh, no.
What brought you into the world of darkness specifically?
Oh my God. Okay, so there was this guy on TikTok named Michikent who kept bugging me about joining this game he was starting up called St. Pete by Night. And I kept telling him, no, dude, I've got like a couple of tables I'm already playing. I'm working my hospital gig 40 hours a week. And then he's just like, oh no, it's play when you want. You don't have to commit to a time. And I'm just like, oh, I can do that. And then I only did that.
As did a lot of people, to be fair. It did have a much more surprising kind of dive in start than I thought it would, for sure.
Yeah.
So kind of talk me through again from your perspective, what was it like once you agreed to play and you kind of started the process of joining the game? What was that like for you, and how much was it kind of different than when you're kind of getting into a D&D game or something like that?
So how it started was just like, okay, I don't know anything about this game. And then you were just like, it's okay, you're a Toreador. You're totally a Toreador. And I'm like, okay, I'm a Toreador. So I start building a Toreador with the joke concept. Yes, my character was a joke. The joke concept of making her every stereotype of a Cuban household. Because I come from a Cuban family. So Carmen, my first VTM character, was meant to just be a stereotype of all the women in my family, my aunt, my mother, my grandmother, all of them. And I didn't read anything. I didn't read anything about the books. I did not read any source material. I didn't look anything up about the Toreador other than they were artists and socialites. I'm just like, all right, I got it. And then we get on a TikTok live. You basically walk me through character creation and you try to like help me min-max as best as possible, to which I said, nah, that doesn't make sense to me. So I'm just like, no, we're going to put the dots here. And then I actually started playing the game and got traumatized immediately because I'm just like, oh, this isn't D&D. I just got stuck with a major boon that I did not know anything about. I should probably start reading about this game. And I started reading about the game, and I've just been absorbing lore ever since for the past year and 2 years now. Absorbing lore nonstop.
I know for people who kind of jump into the world of darkness, I think that they take for granted just how deep that well is. Like, at the surface concept of playing vampires and werewolves and hunters and mages and ghosts and whatnot, it seems simple enough. But then when you actually start to dive in, that well can be very, very deep. What was that like? Was that, like, very overwhelming or kind of intimidating to start poking around in the lore of World of Darkness alone?
So it was a shock at first, especially like the first fuck up I ever did, which was hacking Blood Bank. Get your merch at the St. Pete by Night shop. I hacked Blood Bank because at character creation, I'm just like, oh, she's an Instagram personality, so I want to have three dots in technology. That makes sense to me. And then our first Toreador meeting, I was just like, everyone was asking me, since I was the Instagram person, hey, do you know how to hack? And I'm just like, I don't know. Kent, can I hack with three dots in technology? Sure, apparently I could. And then I made the mistake of antagonizing one of the strongest SPCs in the game, got a stalker for the rest of the game. Love him. And it was a shock because I'm just like, oh, I only have like five hit points. I can die. There's no coming back from being ashed. I just made a mistake that could get me killed. And I was making several mistakes because I knew nothing that could get me killed. And Kent was being extremely generous with my character at the beginning. I'm going to stress that because I should have been killed immediately.
Well, I tried very hard to be extremely generous across the board, but
I brought a cell phone into Elysium and was taking photos because I knew nothing about this game. It was a Camarilla game.
Speaking of Elysium, that's kind of one of the standout moments that sticks with me even 2 years later was your kind of first arrival as Carmen. Like, that first sentence that kind of came out of your mouth was just, it still sticks with me.
So, Kent, first question, do I have my phone?
Yeah.
It's the first thing I asked.
That was the very first thing. And you had the perfect accent, and you just took control of the room.
Oh,
so
God, ghetto Carmen.
It felt like you kind of really embodied the character well. Like, a lot of people can take a feeling out process, but you went in just head first and kind of took command of that room almost immediately.
Well,
talk about that first Elysium experience.
So, like, she was just a stare. Like, she was literally all the women in my family put together and a little bit of me, too. So, like, when I was coming into the game with Carmen, I'm just like, this is going to be a very loud personality who wants to take over the room. She wants to be the center of attention because that's my grandmother right there. And I just walked in. I'm just going to be like, no, I'm going to be blunt. The bluntness is me. The bluntness of Carmen was just me as a person. The socialite aspect was my aunt. I was just literally taking bits and pieces of all these women I grew up with throughout my life. And I just put it into one person. I knew all, they're my family, so I knew all of these women very well, and I knew how to push that into the character. And I knew, I was immediately very comfortable. Like, taking little things from my aspects of my life to put into the character helped me jump into it and become comfortable and portray it well.
Well, and that's been a big topic of debate amongst the TTRPG community, especially after the latest announcements of the newest book coming out for World of Darkness and how they view bleed and how it can be a good thing. And I think really what happened there, and we're not going to get into that. We're not going to launch into a long discussion about that.
Nah.
That's its own stream.
That's its own stream.
But the reality of the situation is, like, yes, it is good to draw from your own experiences when building a character. I think that the wording that they used in the book may have been misleading and probably misinforming. But yeah, to draw from your own experiences, that's how you build a truly fulfilling and deep character with a lot of, like, you know, depth to them. But I think that the difference is you don't draw too much. It's a very, very fine kind of balance as to how much you're willing to offer, so that it doesn't feel like it's you in the character that's experiencing whatever traumas may ensue from the world of darkness.
Especially when I fully, like, because I didn't know the game, and I was, you were very open about how easy it was to just die, and that there was no revivify, nothing like that. You're dead, your character dies, you're dead. So I made Carmen with the anticipation of it being my throwaway character. Right. And she never got thrown away.
Well, and that's a testament too, because we had, God, easily 200 some odd characters come through St. Pete by Night in the first iteration. Mm-hmm. And we got to see varying levels of character growth throughout the game, because I think character growth is an important part of the World of Darkness experience. If you go, you're the same character at the end as you were at the beginning, you didn't really experience much, or you didn't go through a lot. But Carmen, I have to say, was easily one of the characters that had the most character growth that, like, throughout the game. Like, she... if you saw her in that final Elysium versus the first Elysium, or versus the first few sessions, you saw a dramatically different character. Kind of briefly go through what that experience was like, going through that growth, growing through those changes, and as seeing that character kind of change. And how did you view it at the end compared to the beginning?
I viewed it as a coming of age story, honestly. Because the way I had Carmen written out, she basically she was a kindred for 22 years, but basically was, she didn't know shit. She didn't know anything about what kindred life was actually like. She was sheltered as hell because she just grew up in the night. She basically was just raised by her sire in the nightclub that he ran in Miami. And then she just decides one day, I want to go out, and it's like going to college. Like, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to go do things by myself now. And he's just like, all right, you'll be back. Like, I legitimately viewed it as coming of age. It's just like, all right, I'm doing everything. I'm just going to live my life how I do. And then you get hit with that reality. And it's just like, oh, this is not my life as I'm familiar and accustomed to it. I have to learn how to adapt to this. Basically just getting hit with the reality of being a kindred. She was starting to get in trouble. She was doing things that she didn't realize were going to get her in trouble. She was learning from each mistake she did. And with each mistake, she got a little stronger, a little smarter, a little more clever. I ended up becoming a beast when it came to social combat roles. And I found my niche where Carmen should have, where Carmen, like, Carmen got offered the position of Herald, and I used that to help my character grow too. She had a great relationship with Isabel, rocky at times, but viewed her as a Mala that helped her out, taught her, educated her. And she used every lesson, the good and the bad lessons, to just mature and go from being this naive childer who knew nothing into a capable neonate.
So as somebody as somebody who's been through the entire process from beginning to end of knowing nothing about the game to where you are now 2 years later as a storyteller, what do you wish you'd known at the beginning that you know now? Or what kind of advice or tips would you give to somebody who is starting out at this game fresh?
I would have told myself to invest more in background dots, because I think people sleep on how useful they are. I would have told myself to utilize that more. I would not have changed anything about the character development. That was perfect. I would not have changed anything. For me, like, me today to the person I was then, I would have just been like, read the book before you jump in. Read a little bit, learn a little bit. Not everything, because it's impossible to absorb everything before you start playing. Just absorb enough to know, have an idea of what you're doing.
Okay, so It seems like you've taken to the World of Darkness pretty strongly because you've participated in several World of Darkness-based projects, including Newark, running your own game Chicago, now running two different coteries in Saint Pete by Night. Would you say that the World of Darkness or Vampire the Masquerade, how does it rank on your list of TTRPGs in terms of favorites?
So you're this is what you usually want me to say. I love World of Darkness more. It's number one for me. I love the drama. I love the intrigue. I love all of that. That's what I live for. I still adore D&D. D&D has a very special place in my heart, but that's what I play to wind down from this.
Yeah, it's a good like real escapism game, whereas, World of Darkness, there's still a lot of grounded in reality. Though you're playing these like supernatural creatures and monsters and whatnot, there's enough of the real human experience kind of laced in, not to mention the
It's
setting being our
built
very own.
in.
Yeah,
It's
it's
built into the game, the humanity. The humanity is a thing in the game, and battling your humanity with your beast is a mechanic, and I love it.
What was the hardest part of the World of Darkness system for you to learn? Like, what did you struggle with most, kind of getting under your belt and kind of adding to your toolkit?
It's still combat. I still struggle with combat. It's just, it's. That's the one gripe I have with World of Darkness. Their combat system is a little complicated if you're not used to it. And I struggle. I'm one of those people that I can read something 50 times, but until I actually get practice in doing it, that's why I didn't read anything when I started this game. If I don't practice, I learn through practice. And if I don't practice it, I have a hard time retaining it.
And what would you say was your favorite kind of part of this system? What do you like most about the World of Darkness system versus like a D&D or other games?
I like the social combat system. I like how role play can be just as deadly as actual physical combat. It's just insane how it's honestly more deadly than physical combat. Because you, if you were, if you had five, let's say you had five hit point, five health boxes on your vampire, four of those are ag damage. You basically can heal that in 4 nights. Willpower damage, though, that takes time, that takes resources. That is more dangerous to lose that willpower than it is to lose your health.
Yeah, it
It
absolutely is,
is
especially when you get the
hard.
aggravated willpower damage specifically. It can be a process, and I made it especially difficult in Saint Pete by Night because we had so many different players going on. There was a lot to manage, so it was kind of an even more intense process to get that aggravated willpower damage back. And you had to do it on more than one occasion. So
Al's great, guys.
What are some of your favorite moments from the first iteration of the game? Because you were there day one, all the way to the last Elysium, the last event of Saint Pete by Night, at least in the first iteration. What were some of your favorite moments and kind of what was going through your head in those situations?
So one of my favorite moments is the first Elysium with Al. Because I you should you would have if you knew how I was reacting, I threw a chair, Kent. I threw a chair that this guy showed just showed up at Elysium and was getting exonerated of everything. I'm just like, I threw my chair. I was home alone and I threw my chair during the stream. That was one of my favorite moments. I also loved the Miami stream. Obviously. There was also this once I let there was a lot of stuff in the background that a lot of people didn't get to see. And one of my favorite things that I was able to do during this was gain a humanity. I spent 4 months and I loved every moment of it because I felt like I was working towards something. It was hard. I was having to constantly show in RP how I was upholding a conviction that I was about to take. And knowing that just a single roll one way could make all that work pointless. And that was amazing. I also loved my last scene with Isabel. My last scene with Isabel was just great.
So go ahead and recount that memory for those who didn't see it, because I think it was one of those things that, I mean, they saw what happened at Elysium. And for a lot of the streams, for those watching at home who are not familiar with St. Pete by Night, you can find those on Twitch or on YouTube. You can watch all of the streams we had in the first iteration, plus the few streams we've had so far in the second iteration. Anyway, run through that scene with Isabel and kind of what you were feeling and going through it.
So Isabel had been succumbing to the beckoning and was slowly deteriorating before our eyes. And there was a elixir that they had crafted for her. It worked once and we were going to try it again. And I was trusted to take it to her without supervision. First mistake they did. I'm just like, really? Okay. I literally held the fate of the city in my hand for an entire night. I'm just like, I could kill her right now. I could just kill her right now. I had a plan to kill her at some point, but I didn't do it. But I walk into her penthouse by myself, no supervision, no weapons, nothing. She was about to eat me. She was going to diablerize me. I pop on, just look at her in the face and say, listen, you're better than this. I'm going to need you to like rein it in so we can talk like fucking adults, Isabel. I stopped coddling her. I talked to her not as a prince, but as a person. And that's the part I loved the most. She was being very woe was me the entire scene. Just saying like, second guessing every decision she had been making pretty much. And me just standing there and just being like, listen, you're not done. You are not done. You still have, you're going to drink that elixir because you still have to decide who inherits this mess you created. I didn't even call it a goal. I called it a mess. I called it a burden. I told her, you have to decide who is going to take this burden that you have created. And then they have to carry that weight. That is the last thing you have to do before you are even allowed to leave. I was just real with her the entire time.
Are there any moments you wish you could do over from the first iteration? Is there anything you wish you could have changed the way you'd handled it or would have done it differently if you could do it again?
I would have... When I was asked to hack Blood Bank, I would have asked for something. I should have asked for something because I didn't realize how much of an advantage I had over the rest of the Toreador being able to hack. Because it's not a Toreador thing to do, being a computer whiz. In hindsight, I'm just like, I could have just utilized that ability to basically make that clan give me things. They want to find out so much about who's posting on Blood Bank. All right, what are you offering me in return? Because at the end of the day, this is not a game where kindness pays off. Kindness is actually hurts you more. And I learned that as Carmen. Because lost more being generous than I gained the entire game. I sat at one dot of resources the entire game. Because I was being nice. And that was one example of Bleed where the player wanted to be nice to the other player.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I don't regret being nice. I don't regret being nice. I don't regret being nice at all. I just wish I had thought in hindsight, utilize this advantage for your character to help her gain something.
So, as always on After Dark, if you have any questions for our dear guest, Crafty Mirage, feel free to ask them in the Twitch chat. We are monitoring the chat as we go. So, if you have any questions, feel free to submit them there, and we'll ask them on the stream here. But my next question would be, was there a particular moment, or what was kind of the process that made you decide, not only did you want to continue playing in this, but you wanted to try your hand at storytelling? What kind of drove you to wanting to try that? Because it's a big undertaking.
It was a culmination of things. So it was like a very long process. At first, I didn't want to become a storyteller. I just wanted to play because it's just like being a storyteller seems stressful, yada, yada. But then like there would be conversations from like some of the OG players that we would have in voice chats on the Discord where we would be talking to new players, telling them about the server and just talking about our experience in the game. And a lot of the OG players said like a similar thing where it's just like, I wish we had someone who had been like, cause we knew that Kent was busy, but we wish we had a storyteller who could kind of had held our hands and like explain things to us a little bit better and like a tutorial mode storyteller. And that's kind of where like, I kind of got the idea and the inspiration, like I could do that. So like KindredCon came around and we were all just hanging out and I had started talking to you about just being like, you know, I would love to one day potentially be a storyteller that mainly focuses on people who have never played this game before, because I feel like they need that little bit of extra attention, that holding of hands sort of deal. And then I went ahead and started storytelling on a off server to practice because I had never storytelled before. I wanted to make sure I knew my stuff. So that's why I had Kent as one of my players, because I'm just like, I want you there to tell me what I'm doing wrong and what I'm doing right. I want you to be able to tell me, to help me learn and grow and do this better. So it was all just a mat. It was literally just a way, like this whole thing was a process of me wanting to just give back to this community and help you and the other storytellers out.
Now, how much experience did you have running games before deciding to become a storyteller? Had you been a dungeon master? Had you kind of run any other TTRPGs prior to becoming a storyteller on St. Pete? And what was that like?
I ran two chapters of Wild Beyond the Witchlight before, and I ran a couple of one-shots. That's it. And it's really a testament to, you don't need to have any experience to just run a game. You just have to want to do it.
No, you have to have a clever idea. You have to have a good idea. You have to have kind of a concept of story and an ability to play multiple characters in a short period of time and to kind of just keep things going forward, keep things moving, know how to manage a table. And I think players learn those skills just by playing, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nothing that you have to do a lot of work on. It's something you can just learn if you pay attention. If you pay attention to the way, you know, your other storytellers or game masters run a game, you can kind of pick up tips and tricks from that. But yeah, you absolutely don't have to have any experience to dive headlong into running games. What has been the biggest challenge for you in terms of storytelling, as opposed to just the World of Darkness in general? What's kind of been something that you're hoping to improve on as in terms of being a storyteller?
Adapting to my players' decisions. Cause like it's something that I'm still learning. And I know Bera talked a little bit about it last week. I never know what my players are going to do. They're going to outsmart me. I know that. All of you, I see some of my players in the chat right now. You are going to outsmart me. One of my tables already has. Kent, as my player, has outsmarted me several times. And I have to learn to roll with those punches and just adapt and work on the story and not, like, it's a critique that you've given me with Chicago. Don't pull the trigger too soon. I have to be patient, but I also have to learn how to adapt and bob and weave with all of the walls that you guys have, like the inner, like objects you're like, not object, obstacles you're putting in my, like in the path of what I had planned versus what I have to plan now.
Well, and that I think is still one of the biggest pitfalls. I mean, I struggle with it even myself as a storyteller, where you get an idea, a really, really good, fun concept or idea, and you're so excited for it, that excitement is building in you, that you don't have the patience to just hold back, to say, mm-hmm. It's not the time. I've got to look for a good moment to bring this thing into play. You can just, you know, shoot from the hip and bring it into play. And that often becomes problematic because it can completely change the dynamic of a game. Yeah. If you have a good idea, if you have a clever concept, hold on to it. Maybe this isn't the game for it. Maybe this isn't like it's not wasted. If you have it and you don't end up using it, you just save it in your bag of tricks for a later time. You find a downtime in the story or a good moment where you want to change gears. But it's totally understandable. I mean, I've done it before too. In fact, Al was kind of one of my biggest. Yeah. I wanted to slow burn that, but I ended up shooting from the hip.
You said he was like a month. You said he was like a month five or six reveal, and we literally unlocked him at the end of the first week.
Yep. Yeah, he came in, and that whole storyline progressed way faster than I had expected it to. But it was because I was so excited about this concept that I wanted to you know, I started it too early. And luckily it ended up lasting, but it's one of those things where if you burn through all your good ideas too soon, the game's going to go too quick and it might make players feel a little bit of a whiplash in the speed of how the story is going or, well, we're pursuing this story and then this other story comes crashing in. It can really kind of throw off and disjoint a game. So pacing is a big part of it. We've got a question from Cole, who says, what do you feel has been the cleverest move or maneuver you've seen another player make?
This, I can actually, it's very recent because it happened at my Camarilla table, which isn't being streamed, so I can talk about it without ruining any potential streams coming up. I have a Lissandra character in my Camarilla coterie table. And this, I was just so blown away and impressed. I wasn't even mad about it. Like, that's how clever it was. I was just proud as an ST when that happened. She's playing Lissandra. She's never played the game before, my player. But you can tell she put in a lot of work with her backstory and her stat sheet. She wrote me a 15-page backstory, and that was just leading up to the embrace. But there was a ghoul at this art gallery where they were supposed to acquire a painting for that the prince's former child had painted for the previous prince, Isabel. So they're going to acquire, and they find out that there's a ghoul for another kindred in that gallery. She sees that the ghoul is about to make a phone call. And instead of making a scene or doing anything, she just casually walks over to stand beside the ghoul, observing some art on the wall to you, and used her oblivion to interfere with the cell phone strength, with the cell phone signal. She couldn't get a call out. She's trying to call her Dometer and she can't, because she's not realizing that there is a Lissandra standing right next to her. And I'm just like, that was so good. And the entire table loved that move. They were just like, that is so good.
Yeah, and that's a clever way of turning a negative into a positive, because that's supposed to be a Clan Bane that's supposed to work against the character. And yet, in good circumstances, you can possibly take that, you know, that ability or that opportunity and use it as a positive. Another example is Nosferatu is using their ugliness for the purposes of intimidation versus persuasion.
Gee, I wonder who does that.
I'm just saying. But, you know, there are ways to turn flaws into a positive, and that's one of the things that I love about the World of Darkness system as a whole, is the fact that they really do weigh heavily on these are drawbacks, these are negatives. Like, there's all these different ways you can build your character. But experienced and clever players, or even not experienced players, if they see something, you just find out a way to incorporate it in a positive way, and it can change the entire course of a game. Yeah, absolutely, or an entire course of a scene. St. Petersburg by Night is brought to you through collaborations with our partnered vendors, Wolfpack Dice, Ember Fox Dice, Dragon Ink Dice, Bera the Bard, Champs Tramps, Panchi Artista, and Chromatic Creations. Links to our partner vendors, as well as our Twitch and YouTube channels, can be found on our website, stpetebynight.com. The official theme song for St. Petersburg by Night is Vampire by Faith and Failure. You can find them at faithandfailure.com. You can follow SPBN on all socials with the hashtag St. Pete by Night. If you wish to support our program, you can do so at ko-fi.com/St. Pete by Night to help keep the stories rolling. So, what has come easiest to you as a storyteller? What do you feel is like your groove, your most comfortable kind of trait or feature as a storyteller?
You know those like conspiracy boards that people have, like the red string on and are connecting everyone to each other? I'm good at that. I'm good at connecting people to each other to make them more invested in each other and the story as a whole. Like when I was working on Chicago, I didn't get to touch on a lot of it because of how the story progressed, but I had connections between all of the characters at that table. You shared a touchstone with an SPC, which you found out at the end of the game. That same SPC, like that same touchstone, was in a relationship with one of another person's touchstone's gang, and also an undercover CIA agent that was supposed to be the first seeds of the Second Inquisition. I'm good at like finding ways to connect people to each other.
No, that's
and
that's
make them more
fantastic.
Invested.
And it gives more to the story. Like we only kind of scratched the surface of those relationships, and we really only found out even any about it at the very, very end of the game. And I think that that's another thing that kind of sets the World of Darkness apart from a lot of other games is the fact that the whole story might not even be told. They might not ever find out everything. Like there's so many different kind of avenues for story in just the way the mechanics build the characters with the concept of touchstones and convictions and all those background dots. Like you can create all of these strings, as you put it, that can go a variety of directions, and you might not even ever touch on them, but just having them is beneficial. So you're running two games currently, one of them which will be airing on Twitch and on YouTube in the next few weeks here. Tell us kind of in a way, without spoiling too much, kind of give us the pitch for those games. What are kind of the concepts behind the groups and the story? Again, without giving too much away, kind of give your sales pitch on those two games.
So for my Anarch game, I really wanted to go back to basics and exploring the threat, like with the ant, because it's my Anarch game. I wanted to go back to basics and how ultimately at the end of the day, the biggest threats that the Anarchs face outside of just humanity and the mass and like the risk of breaking the masquerade is the Camarilla. And while yes, a lot of Anarchs are just like 100% fighting against the Camarilla, the St. Pete Anarchs are not that. They are trying to cohabitate with the Camarilla. So when there are messes, they have to be cleaned up quietly, so that way that they can continue the peaceful cohabitation. And that's my sales pitch for that one. It's maintaining the balance that keeps everyone alive.
And that story is called Don't Get Caught. And the debut episode is going to be airing in the next few weeks here, hopefully before the beginning of the year. And you've already got two episodes in the can of that.
I do.
And a third coming up soon. Tell me about that coterie. Tell me about that particular group and how they've kind of settled in. Because you are working with a vast variety of experience. You're working with several players from several different walks of life that kind of came together, as is a lot of coteries in the game that we're currently running. They kind of came together because of the server. And so you've got people who don't necessarily have a lot of experience with each other. Kind of tell me about that coterie and kind of how they've gelled and how they've come together, and maybe a little bit about the characters.
The coterie, like players themselves, are gelling so well. I only hate that we have to only do 2-hour sessions because one of our players is in the UK, in France, in Europe. So like I limit it specifically so he's not up till like 3 a.m. But the players are collaborate so well together. It's like they've been playing together for a long time. I'm amazed by it. The characters themselves, we've got a runaway Ventru, we've got a streetwise Nosferatu, we've got a Mariner Gangrel with aspirations of being fancier than he actually is, and we've got an activist Bruja. And they theoretically, none of these characters should go together, but they've been brought together through the various connections of the Baron of that location, Sebastian. And it's just like, it's working. They're working so well together. They have a good balance. Like, all of their abilities are kind of balancing each other out very well. The only thing that they lack, though, is foresight. They have no way, there's no aspects within that group at all. And it's actually interesting.
Yeah, and that's really tough. It's hard to cover all of the bases in the World of Darkness because, again, mm-hmm. there are so many different layers. There are so many different abilities. You kind of have to accept, at least in a regularly sized group, that there might be something lacking, and finding creative or clever ways to work around those deficiencies to try and using the resources around you to work around the things that might be holding you back. Give us the kind of the thesis statement or the pitch about the Camarilla game, as well as the question about that group and the players and characters.
So when I view the Camarilla, I view it as an old entity that fully expects the youth to clean up their messes while they continue to sit at their lofty height. So with the Camarilla game, I really wanted the players coming in who didn't get a chance to really play Camarilla or who haven't played in the game at all to have a chance to experience the old iteration. And that's why it's called Mementos. This coterie got put together to retrieve items that were stolen from the late prince the night she succumbed to the beckoning. Her handmaidens robbed her penthouse, and not everyone knows exactly what I know what kind of stuff Isabel had up there, but not everyone did. And some of those things, pretty threatening to just not just the masquerade, but Kindred Society, St. Pete itself, and potentially the state. But I want them to experience the knowledge that, like, it's just an inevitability. Like, the youth inherits everything, including the mistakes and messes of the previous generations.
Well, and that's kind of the danger of the Beckoning taking a high-ranking elder away, is, like, how worried are they about, you know, wrapping everything up and making sure things stay? Because they're walking away to basically a death sentence. And they're not really having a choice in the matter. It's kind of something that's thrust upon them to have to leave like that. So it is kind of like, what is the after effects or the aftershock of their departure? And how sudden is it? You know, if they don't have the time to kind of tie up all their loose ends and make sure their affairs are in order, it does fall on the young to kind of deal with that. And I think that's been a big thing about 5th edition World of Darkness and Vampire the Masquerade specifically, is the focus is primarily on the young. It is primarily on the youngest of the kindred and having to deal with this world where the elders are gone or leaving, and now they're having to kind of inherit all of the responsibilities and drawbacks of being part of the Camarilla or the Anarchs. And so I think that's a very, very fascinating story, and I think there's going to be a lot of very interesting things coming out of that.
With that one, I will say that the biggest threat is a mistake that a player made in the last iteration that never went away.
Yeah. So, Tumultus asks, in the last iteration of the game, what SPC and what player character scared you the most?
The SPC that scared me the most was Hush. Hush is terrifying. I ain't touching that with a 10-foot pole.
So for those that are unaware, Hush was the scourge of the city. He was the second Scourge that was brought in to the city, and he was, or is, because he is still in the current iteration of the game. He is a Lysandra that is particularly old and particularly powerful. I don't want to give too many details, as there are still things to be found out. But he is—he was definitely one of the more terrifying NPCs for the purposes of keeping order within the city. What was it about Hush that scared you the most?
His ability, like, just the first encounter I had with him, all I did was look at him, and I woke up hungrier the next evening. That, oh, also, I watched him take out Gabriel. Effortlessly. That is terrifying, because me as a player knew Gabriel was a strong combat character. And this Scourge took him out like he was a fledgling. Put him into torpor, nothing. No, like, no effort at all. And it was scary.
So, the second part of the question, what player character scares you the most?
Player character. Oh my god, that one's a tough one. Just players or not? Like, they can't, like, if it's just players...
Just PCs, yeah.
Just PCs. So, okay. Charlie.
And why?
Because if she, because she didn't have to be physically intimidating herself, because she literally befriended everyone and made them want to do stuff for her.
So her ability to kind of play the social game made her...
She was threatening. She could have, like... She could have gotten people to kill for her if she had put her mind to it. And they would have. They would have.
Yeah.
Case in point, my character, Carmen, would have killed for her. It's like, you fuck with Charlie, I will fuck you up.
So, changing gears a little bit, tell me about Chromatic Creations. What, like, you are a huge, I mean, crafty is in your handle, so you really do like the process of crafting and creating things. One, how did you get into it? And two, what made you decide to kind of start a business and start focusing on it that way? And, you know, talk about your products and sell people on it.
So, I went to a convention in Michigan that some people might know about, you especially, YomaCon. I went to YomaCon one year, and I saw that there was a booth with a bunch of crochet plushies at it. And I wanted to buy one of them, but they were $75 for the cheapest one. And I'm just like, that's too expensive. I can't afford that. But you know what? I can make something like that if I put my mind to it. And I did put my mind to it. And I practiced and I practiced and I did not stop making stuff. And then... I started getting into D&D TikTok, and I started making dice bags based on characters from D&D. Like, I made a Henry Crabgrass dice bag that I know is on the shelf right next to you.
It's over there.
Yeah. I made dice bags based on Critical Role characters. I started making dice bags for VTM. Like, this is one of my basic ones right here. That's just basic red, black lining. And then I'm like, I can make dice that are based around people's character concepts, theme them. Like, right now I'm working on this one for Leisha and her ministry character. She wants it to be black on the outside with like this green edging and the inside gold. So I've been like, I kind of just capture, like, I talk to the player, I capture their character's aesthetic, and I put it into a bag that kind of represents the character and who they are. They've come with trauma notes in the past that the storytellers themselves write, and they are very good for stimming, from what I've been told, because they are very soft. And I know for a fact that several players on the server are constantly just playing with them during a tent scene.
Well, and I've got two of your bags right here. One, the owl bag that you gave me, that's got the charms, which everybody...
Those are also cursed.
The inside here looks like shattered glass, as Al was and is a Malkavian. And one thing that I love about these bags is they're so durable. Like, my primary bag, my storytelling bag, has traveled cross country. Like, it's been thrown in luggage, it's been thrown in totes, it's gone all over this great nation of ours. Great in quotations.
Tyler's has been to six states.
Yeah, and so, and they hold up. Like, I don't see any fraying, I don't see any wear. It, like, they really do kind of maintain their shape. The ribbons don't lose any quality. They tie up really nicely. And they hold quite a lot of dice. And I think that you've made bigger ones. 45
at my smallest.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for all the dice goblins out there, it is a worthwhile buy because you can fit a lot of those shiny clickety-clackety math rocks into one bag. Go ahead. Yeah. So you can get a lot into a single bag, and they hold up. They withstand the test of time. So what got you into crocheting as a whole? What got you into this kind of this particular craft?
It helped me with manage my anxiety because I fidget a lot when I'm anxious, and it's something that I can just, even now, just I can just carry on a conversation, and I can just talk to you and just have my hands doing something. That helps me meditate a little bit. Sometimes I can just sit quietly and do this for hours.
And I've seen you do it during video games. I've seen you do it during, you know, gaming sessions. I've seen you do it pretty much all the time.
I'm constantly crocheting.
And you're really quick about it, too. Your turnaround on some of these bags is incredible. Like, I don't know how you have the focus to do that.
I hand sew the linings into them because my bags are the yarn is too thick to go through a sewing machine. So I literally have to hand sew the linings into them.
100%. So working with Etsy, deciding to start a store and kind of create Chromatic Creation US as a brand, you know, what that takes a lot of confidence. As somebody who was a small business owner and was able to retire on it, thankfully, little tip of my own cap. But making that decision to kind of make this a business and sell it takes a lot of gumption and confidence. And what was that like? What was that process like for you to kind of step up and decide to make this a profession?
I just kind of just told myself, like, honestly, a lot of it was champ, actually, because I remember during one of those 24-hour lives that you and Champ did, to help someone with fundraising. I got a tarot card reading from Champ. At both of those, it was the same damn reading telling me to just fucking do it already. There was something I was wanting to do. I was unhappy with my current work life and everything, and that there was something I was really wanting to do, and I just had to just do it and commit to it. And I'm just like, fuck it, I'll commit.
Yeah, that translates to a lot of things in life. Like, it obviously starting a business, it's scary. It's a scary prospect, but if you do your research and you put in the effort and you're willing to actually, like, really put your nose to the grindstone, like, you can make a successful business without having a lot of money at the beginning, without having a lot of help or resources. Like, if you have the creativity and the drive and the ability to budget your time and your what resources you do have, you can make this happen. And I think that translates really well to storytelling, gaming. Like, people get really intimidated by the fact of running a game or learning a new system. And if you just dive in, if you just do it, try it, see what happens, you'd be surprised at how successful you can be. So what are some products that you offer on your store, and how do people get a hold of you, or how do people kind of make that all happen?
Most of my work, honestly, I have some listings up there, but most of my work is going to be commission-based because I want to be able to cater to people who want something unique and different. I can make pretty much anything. I make dice bags mostly, but I've also been known to make crochet plushies. I've made hat accessories. I've got a hat for Champ right over there hanging on a lampshade. That it's a mushroom hat. I've made two hats for Barra. One he wore last week on the stream. Yeah, the wizard hat, Barra. I can make a lot. I make apparel items. I made this crochet cardigan that's literally right... Ow, I pulled my earbud out. I made this crochet cardigan that's right behind me. Yep, I made this. It. I made this. I just took the time and effort to do it. I'm making a freaking curtain that's nature-y for my doorway. Like, because like someone who's really good at VTM, he may or may not be here right now, said a good way for Nosferatu to make their obfuscate useless is to put a beaded curtain in your doorway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's genius.
So transitioning back to kind of storytelling and everything, you became a storyteller while we were on break in preparation for the revamp, where we were remodeling kind of the entire way the whole server was going to work. Because for those who don't know, the server originally began as an open world kind of West Marches style game where if you showed up, you could play. And it kind of also became a LARP, and it went through a lot of growing pains throughout that process until we reached the point where we decided we needed to put it to an end, shut it down, remodel it, retool it, and start it up. As someone who was a day one player who went through the entire first iteration and then transitioned into being a storyteller, what was that process, the process of the revamp and everything like for you? Because I know one of the biggest things that people struggled with was having to say goodbye to their characters, and you especially having one of the longest running characters in the St. Pete by Night kind of setting. You know, what were some of the struggles that you had to overcome and some of the positives that came out of this process?
The struggle, it was sad. I'm not going to lie. It was sad saying goodbye to Carmen. But at the end of the day, I was just telling myself, this is a game. It's not more important than my friends and the mods and the storytellers who are exhausted. I could see it in all of your guys' faces, how tired you were running the server. Like, I'm running it. I'm helping run it now as a storyteller and a mod. It's a lot of work. And there's more mods now than there were in the previous iteration, more storytellers and everything. That was more work. And there was there was less of you. I can't imagine how exhausting that must have been. So yeah, it was sad to see my characters go, but the good thing that came out of it was seeing my friends and like my fellow players and the mods finally just be able to take a breath. Because, and I'll say it too, you said last week you were dreaming in Discord. I was thinking in Carmen. It was the character was taking over my mind some days, and I'm just like, I needed a break too from my own character.
Well, and I know one of the bigger drawbacks about the older iteration versus now, and again, for those who don't know, it was a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week Discord server that was running pretty much 7 days a week between OpenRP and sessions, was pacing. Pacing was very, very difficult to maintain. I mean, we busted through at least 6 months of story within the first month easily, yeah. Or at least what I had planned to be 6 months of story, because there were players just always active, always chasing and doing and moving and shaking. And that became a little bit harder to maintain. And I think that, especially in World of Darkness, VTM, storytelling in general, pacing is important. A good book doesn't have all the action happen in the first chapter or the first several chapters. It happens spread out, paced in timing, but gaming isn't writing. It isn't authors. It isn't where you get to control every aspect. There's the player element too. So now, running in a more weekly or bi-weekly format for these coteries, still offering the open RP, what do you think, how do you feel about the pacing and kind of the way things are laid out now as opposed to then?
The pacing is a lot better. It took two sessions for them to get through what I had initially planned for the first session. The pacing, like having a set time limit, a set start time limit, and just everyone having that chance to have a break to think of their next course of action, I kind of feel like grounds them a little bit more, grounds me a lot more. And I think it's just more beneficial overall just for story health and for player health.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What are you most excited for coming up in this process? Now that the revamp is officially off and running, games are happening, stories are happening. What are you really, really looking forward to in the future?
I'm looking forward to that first moment where I could throw a twist at my players that they didn't see coming. I want what you did to me, a moment where I'm just like, and just in the moment, just like, what do I do? What happened? What is happening right now? I just want that. I want to experience that. I want to, as a storyteller, just finally experience just like freaking my table out, just being like, and having them like, ah.
What are some
coming for you, Kraz?
What are some pitfalls or kind of traps or problems that you are trying to avoid? What are some things that you could see potentially being problematic that you are trying to keep an eye out for or look around for in the future?
I am very much a proponent of collaborative storytelling and everyone working together. And one thing I'm definitely going to curb, because it's something I saw in the last iteration a lot, everyone, like one person thinking that they can do everything. I don't want that at my table personally. I want everyone to work together and utilize each other's strengths and weaknesses to tell a better story together. Because yes, at the end of the day, it's fun being the main character, but if you want to be the main character all the time, just write a book.
Yeah, absolutely. When you can control the narrative, and there's nothing wrong with that either. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be, you know, being invested and being excitable and, you know, taking initiative on stuff. But it's one of those things that you really have to feel out at your table. You have mm-hmm. to offer space. There's a philosophy of step up, step back. Step up means when you need to, when you're called upon, when the moment is right to step up and kind of take charge of a situation or to keep the story focused or moving forward or progressing. You know, that's your moment. But there's also the step back philosophy, which is stepping back and offering others a chance to have that moment, to be the ones by asking, you know, what does everybody think? Or does anybody have any other ideas? Because in the gaming community as a whole, we have a wide variety of individuals, including tons and tons of neurospice all over the place. And a big part of that is, you know, some people get shy. Some people get withdrawn. Some people aren't very outgoing. And so
sometimes it's the opposite. Because of the neurospiciness, people are a little too upfront for bull rushing ahead. I'm one of those people. I acknowledge that I am a loud personality and I have learned to try to like rein myself in. It's a process, but if you identify it in yourself, it's easier to.
And it's also just knowing that everybody there is to have fun, not taking things too personally, giving your fellow players the room to say, hey, like maybe put the brakes on a little bit without being offended by that concept, or saying like, hey, you need to speak up more. Like communication in all things in life is so, so important. So being, you know, open and communicating with your fellow players at your table, whether it's as the role of a storyteller or as a player, is paramount, because you don't know what other people are going through and other people don't know what you're going through if you don't talk about it.
Communicate.
If you don't have the confidence to just say like, hey, this rubbed me the wrong way, or I feel like I'm not getting my moment, or I feel like I'm taking too much time. Like, how do you guys feel about that? It's how you're going to ensure a long-lasting game. It's how you're going to ensure that something is built to last and that you are going to be meeting every week and that you are going to be a part of this experience. Because if you do hold back too much, you know, or if you don't say these things, that's where they fester and become these bigger issues that can lead to the death of a game. So I'm going to open myself up now to some feedback and critique from you, because you were one of the more active players in the first iteration. We've played a lot of games together,
yes,
a lot of sessions together. What do you think were some of the biggest critiques you would give about the St. Pete experience? That includes the previous iteration, the revamp process, and this new iteration of the game. What are some things that you think could be improved upon or changed?
With the previous iteration, and it's not just, it wasn't just a you individual thing. It was literally everyone. And this is literally a critique for everyone. Spread the wealth. Spread the wealth. Like, spread the plot. There are people that are good at specific things across the board. And don't put yourself in a box either. Get to know people, get to know other individuals. Cause, like, yeah, it's comfortable playing with the same people all the time, but you're also missing out on some potentially amazing moments with others. Spread the wealth, branch out. That was my biggest critique with the previous iteration.
So you feel like it's, again, that step up, step back philosophy of like, yes, we're all here having this experience. And while I might really, really want to be a part of every aspect of this particular storyline, maybe I should invite others in or kind of allow for that step back mentality to allow people to also kind of have the same enjoyment and experience I'm having.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was, what was your favorite, like, what's been your favorite parts of this whole process? What has this St. Pete experience meant to you as a whole? Like, not just in terms of in-game experience or anything like that, but for you, Nikki, the person, what has
the community? The community. I love the community. I love having this server. I love that there is just a group of people at any given time that are extremely excited about a subject that we all love and we all get excited about, that we can talk for hours about a single piece of lore. Like, it, I love that. I love it so much. I love being able to just get to know people and get to meet people who also, across the entire globe, who also share this interest. That's amazing to me. Like, that's one good thing that came out of the pandemic is everyone.
What would you tell people who are dragging their feet about joining, that might be watching these but not haven't quite joined in, or people who are sitting in tourist status on the server? What would you say to them to encourage them that it's a worthwhile decision to get involved?
It's fun. It's worth it. Like, yeah, it's understandable being shy and being a little intimidated. It's a lot of people. We have a lot of people on the server. It's not a surprise. But just dip your toe. Just dip your toe. Start with maybe like a couple people. And if it gets too much, then you can step out. But just send a message every now and then, and like start talking to people. Because like, you never know when a storyteller is going to be ready to pick up another table. And if you start getting to know the people in the community, you can get a coterie together a lot quicker and get onto a table a lot faster. And yeah, like,
you're more likely to get picked up if people know you. Like, that's one of the big things about this revamp is we're working with a lot of people we've never played with before. And we're definitely, as storytellers, going to be more hesitant to pick up people that we don't know. We don't know them. We can't get a feel for them or can't get a vibe on what kind of player they are. And so if you don't introduce yourself, if you don't put yourself out there, we don't know you. And so we're more likely to pick people that we know, people that we've seen around being active and being involved and participating.
Like, I was nervous when I first got my tables because I'm just like, I don't know. Like, aside from like a couple of people, I'm like, I don't know these people. I don't know how we're going to vibe. I don't know how we're going to gel. And I love them. I love my tables. They're so great. They're so clever. I've got my Lissandra player never played before. And I am blown away by how clever they are.
Absolutely.
Just like, it's insane. Like, all this talent that I didn't realize was right there.
No.
It's intimidating too. Now I'm intimidated on a whole different level. It's not the fact that I'm like, I don't know these people. It's like, damn, these are fucking amazing people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so to all the players out there, all the people out there that are watching or are kind of stopping by, check us out. Come visit. Yeah. Come join the come Discord play. Server. Come. You don't have to jump into a game right away. That's another beautiful thing about this community and this server is it's not a pressure to get into a game. If you don't have the time to commit, we're now offering one-shot opportunities for people who are not in games to kind of experience it for themselves and get a taste of it and get access to our Open RP community before joining a table eventually. So you do get to kind of make your own schedule and still get that West Marches aspect that was really important to me of like knowing that scheduling is the bane of TTRPGs. It is the thing that makes games fall apart, makes communities fall apart. So if you don't have the time, that's no reason to not get involved and try it out for yourself. And our staff is around most of the day, most days. So you can ask questions. You can learn about the World of Darkness. You don't even have to play in St. Pete to learn something from the server and to be a part of the community. You can just be someone who is interested in or curious about or passionate about the World of Darkness and getting involved with that. So as we bring things to a close tonight, is there anything that you would like to promote or to kind of any last words that you want to say before we put a button on this thing?
Definitely periodically check our Twitch channel here. It's amazing. Do we have a dice giveaway tonight? I don't know, Mimic.
We do not have a dice giveaway tonight. We're probably going to do one next week, though.
Next week. I want to plug the game, like a couple of the games. I'm in Newark by Night every other Monday on Basics of the Games Twitch channel. I play a Malkavian Feather. She's chaotic. I love her. I never reroll messy crits. I like to plug the game, the D&D game that I'm about to start DMing over on Dinner and a Games Twitch channel. It's going to be a Wild Beyond the Witchlight game. It's going to be Sundays at 12 p.m. Eastern every Sunday. And I just want more friends. So come to our server and come play with us because I want to make more friends. This is the most friends I've ever had in my life.
No, absolutely. And I can't speak highly enough about Nikki, you, and her business, which I'm going to promote one more time, Chromatic Creation US. It's over on Etsy, etsy.com/ChromaticCreationUS, I believe is the URL. But go check it out. The prices are affordable. The turnaround is great. Get in contact with Crafty about setting up a custom dice bag for a particular character or
you
game.
You can DM me on Discord or on the Etsy itself.
Absolutely. Or if you have a particular vibe you're going for, she can accommodate that as well. But,
yes.
Thank you so much, Crafty, for joining me tonight. It's been an amazing experience having you as part of the community, having you as part of the storyteller team, and having you as a friend.
I know you.
When all this first started, we were basically just strangers on TikTok, and now I'm happy to call you a very, very close friend and someone that I talk to pretty much every single day. I talk to you pretty much every day.
I forgot to stop you today.
That's true. That is one of the great joys that this community has brought me, one of many, many, many joys. So go check out Crafty Mirage on TikTok, join the community and meet her personally, potentially you could end up in one of her games. Go check out St. Pete by Night as well on social media. You can see some of the links listed down below. But we're on Instagram, we're on X, we're on YouTube, we're on Discord. We're pretty much everywhere. So go check us out. And thank you for joining us again for another St. Pete by Night After Dark. Thank you to my guest, Nikki Crafty Mirage.
Hi.
And we will see you all on Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday, for another episode of Rage Across Tampa, as well as next Saturday for another special After Dark episode where we'll talk to potentially another member of the community or potentially another storyteller. Who knows? It's always kind of a surprise on this thing. But look forward to seeing you guys then. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and fangs out.
Ow!
This has been a St. Petersburg by Night production. After Dark is produced in agreement with the World of Darkness and Dark Pack. The host for After Dark is Kent. Visit our website at stpetebynight.com for more information about all of our productions and how you can become part of our community. Thank you for listening. Until next time. fangs, stakes, and claws out.